Hello, everyone. Thank you for watching another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. I'm here with Pete Quinones. How are you doing, Pete?
Doing good, Reed. How are you?
Doing well. Glad to have you back on.
Thank you. So
before we get into the subject material, you just went on Tim Pool. You've moved from Georgia. You're financially independent. Big things happening in your life, right, man?
Well, yeah, Pool was great. I left Georgia. Financial independence is, there are some connotations that go along with that. Like a lot of people, when they hear that, they're like, somebody has seven figure, you know, maybe eight figures in the bank. Well, it's just gotten to the point where I can support myself from the show. And that's pretty much, I'm starting to get some advertising, which is actually shocking. But the people who listen to the show are the ones who are making that happen. So, you know, that's very, I don't forget that. I don't forget the fact that the reason that I can get up in the morning at whatever time I want, knock out my Substack, pop it out there and get everything going for the day so that people can hear what I have to say and what a guest has to say is because they're making that happen for me. And I'm very appreciative of it.
Yeah. And you've only been doing this, what, 4 years now? Or
4 years. Yeah. A little over 4 years.
Yeah. Well, congrats, man. That's really great. Happy for you.
Thank you.
So, you and I, we've always gotten along fine. I've never come at you sideways. You've never come at me sideways, but we have friends. Well, I have friends who hate you. I think you have some friends who hate me. And I think this has been a conversation that's just been kind of bubbling over, and there's been a lot of Twitter battles about it. So I thought it would be great just to talk face to face and kind of flush these ideas out, because I think you and I actually agree on a lot of this stuff. But there's kind of been a heated battle over religion in libertarian circles. And I know you've kind of moved more to a Praxian angle, but you're probably the most libertarian involved of the Praxians, right? Like, would you say that's accurate? You're the one who's interacting the most with the Libertarian Party, probably? Or
correct. Yeah. So I mean, I try to keep it. I lose my shit every once in a while. I think everyone knows that if you believe in astrology, I'm a Scorpio. That should be obvious to anyone who listens to it. But and I'm from the Bronx. So my mouth gets me in trouble sometimes. I have to apologize and everything. But I also try, when my friends are fighting, I don't like to take sides.
Right.
You know, I like to sit back and just be like, okay, you know, after famously, after a couple people that I'm friends with went after Dave, I had Dave on my show to talk about it,
right,
and address it. And people were like, we want to see what Pete's going to laugh at, what Pete's going to, you know, whose side is Pete taking? And that wasn't the whole purpose of that. The whole purpose of that was just let Dave speak. And then in the last, you know, one third of it, I put my own objections to what I thought he was, you know, what I thought the Mises Caucus plan was. And, you know, I'm taking a lot of crap for that privately. Let's just say that I've had some private conversations with some people whose names you might know. And we get in some heated discussions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of inevitable. This is very relevant to you too. I had you on the first time, I think in March, and you were talking about all the scumbags in the movement and how they try to ruin your life. And to me at that time, that was all pretty foreign because I was kind of new rising up, and I've had that happen a lot. And not just the scumbags, but when your friend circle expands, it gets complicated because then you have people who don't just disagree with each other. You have friends who have like legal battles against each other. And I mean, I've just learned to keep my friend circle as small as I can. And then that's just the easier way to stay out of that.
There are a lot of people that I'm friendly with, that I'm cordial with, that I do not consider to be friends.
Right.
The amount of people that I consider to be like friends that I can say anything to and really air it out is very, very small. We were talking about that back in March about these people, and I've blocked all of them. I don't even pay attention to them anymore. I know they still talk about me. I don't care. I'm doing my own thing. I consider what I'm doing to be very important and something that could actually maybe even changed the trajectory of the movement. It's not only me, it's other people who I think are very intelligent. And, you know, we all have our personalities, and we can all, when we get attacked, we attack and attack back. But what you were saying is, yeah, you quickly find out that there are a lot of people who joined became libertarians and joined the movement because it's a small pond, and it's easy for somebody who's not even very exceptional to stand out in a small pond and have people pat them on the back. And you see that a lot on social media. And you know, and you can usually tell who these people are because they have the worst opinions. They talk about positive rights. They have talking points that are directly from the left and directly from woke progressivism. And that has no place in a theory of private property. So, you know, I mean, I've just basically blocked all of them. Every once in a while, somebody be like, oh, you said that you took ivermectin on Tim Pool's show when you, when you got COVID, and some show recently reported that you took horse paste from, you know, a feed store and everything like that. It's like, I mean, I have over 10,000 listeners. One of them might be able to hook a brother up, you know, with some real stuff, you know? So, yeah, I mean, but, you know, when I found out about that, I was just like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to list. I went and looked at the video, and the video had less than 100 views. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get that. I get 100 views or 100 listens when I release it early to my supporters. I get double that. Right. So it's like, why am I worried about that?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I've adopted a similar philosophy when it comes to that. And the other thing is, a lot of the haters, you know, they have like a tenth or a hundredth of the audience you do usually. And, you know, they come after you saying like, you're an idiot. You don't have anything interesting to say. You're just a grifter, whatever. And it's like, well, okay, if that's true, then that doesn't say very good things about you. You know, if you can only get 100 views on your video, and you're complaining that I am an uninteresting person or that I'm a grifter or whatever it is, that might say more about you than it does about me. Because I from the time that I started getting visible in this movement, I've said that this is more a damnation of the current times than it is an attribute to how impressive I am. And I don't just see that in the liberty movement, like getting the job I have, you know, before I was hauling super heavy equipment with like 11 axles, I was hauling like regular sized loads, 6-axle jobs. And when I put out a feeler for applications, I thought, oh, everyone's going to say you need to have 2 more years over the road. You need to haul oversized equipment for a full year before we even look at you. But everyone was just like, oh, you don't have a DWI. And you don't have accidents and you show up to work on time. Okay, when do you want to start? You know, this is kind of like the way this world is going. If you have any sort of consistency or any sort of character, then you stand out. And I don't think that that should be impressive. I think that should sort of be the status quo, but it's not anymore.
Well, the fact that, you know, people who, you know, all you have to do is look at the people who stand out in any kind of movement, especially political movement, and you can see how unimpressive we are as a society. 250 years ago, there were obviously impressive elites. You know, you had, as much as I don't like that damn liberal Antifa guy, Thomas Jefferson, the guy was impressive as hell. I mean, he was really, really impressive. I mean, he knew architecture, he knew medicine. He knew everything. You know, people, when you look at some of the people like who are the voices of the conservative movement now? Candace Owens? Yeah. Candace Owens? Seriously, I would love to see what her Stanford Binet test is. I would love to see what that score is and compare it to mine. Because it's a joke, you know? And I was on Tim Pool with Sean Parnell, who's running for Senate out of Pennsylvania, and he is one of the nicest people I've met. I mean, we had a great time off camera and on. And but you know, it's like he's just a regular guy. I mean, he's like someone that you could just hang with and have beers and everything. And, you know, he's fairly smart and intelligent on a lot of things, but neither he nor I are elites. Mm-hmm. And we're talking to hundreds of thousands of people. That yeah. should probably tell you something. You know, it's like, I guess we have the Jordan Petersons of the world. And I mean, look at Joe Rogan. I mean, Joe Rogan will be the first person to tell you, you know, I'm just a comedian from, you know, the Northeast.
Yeah.
Why are so many people tuning into the show and everything like that? So, you know, I just try to do my best really on the show, on my show. And when I write, most of my writing is just venting. And I think a lot of people like that, you know, like venting. So that's why, you know, my Substack has blown up the way it has. But on my show, I just try to have people on there who are making good points and are observing exactly what the culture has become. Because you can make the argument over and over again, politics, the state and everything. The culture drives everything. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when you've realized that the media and academia and, you know, now in this age, tech drives culture. And then you look and you see who are running those things, man. And those people aren't impressive either.
Right.
You know, it's like Jeff Bezos has over $100 billion because he has CIA contracts. It's like, I mean, Elon Musk. I mean, I think Elon Musk would be probably wealthy in a free market society. I think he'd probably be a very wealthy person. But the reason he has a lot of his wealth is because he gets taxpayer money.
Right.
Same way that Jeff Bezos does. I mean, that's just the system we live in. And it's not particularly, I mean, it's impressive that they got to that point. But to me, they're not particularly impressive people. I've seen both of them interviewed and they're not saying anything that impresses me at all. I mean, Tom Woods is way more impressive to me. I'd rather listen to Tom Woods talk for 3 hours than listen to Elon Musk talk for 3 hours. I mean, that's just, and I don't think that's a bias because I agree with Tom on so much. It's just because he's going to say stuff that's way more interesting. Jeff Deist from the Mises Institute. 3 hours of Jeff Deist over pretty much anyone in the world at this point. And I include Jordan Peterson in that because he's saying stuff that's not coming off of a conveyor belt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of what you're speaking to here is what Nietzsche talked about. And a lot of Christians, I think, just dismiss Nietzsche immediately. But Nietzsche, with his God is dead proclamation, that wasn't a rejoicing statement. Yeah. He worried about the replacement of God in society. And he was very critical of how academia and the arts and everything that was replacing God was sending society in the wrong direction. But I think, I mean, I certainly agree with that. I think you probably agree with that. But why don't you just give us what you think about the disappearing of religion and the negative connotations that can have?
Well, obviously, like, the morality of the West is steeped in Christian tradition. For somebody who can lay it out a lot better than me is David Gornosky. Mm-hmm. David Gornosky, A Neighbor's Choice. And I think his podcast called Hidden Things. And he lays it out. He's been on my show. If you search Free Man Beyond the Wall, David Gornosky, you'll hear him lay out some information that'll just blow you away. And he'll prove to you that even the Salem witch trials were, or when we see like somebody being executed by the state, you know, how that comes out of, they think it's out of compassion, out of some kind of Christian compassion. And it's just like a bastardizing of Christianity. Mm-hmm. But I mean, basic morality is, you know, one of the things I like to mention is, you know, people say, well, yeah, I talk about how like the Bible, like in the Old Testament, in the Torah, God says, well, if you're going to take that land, you can take the women there too, and they can be your bride. Or if, you know, I mean, there's just some vile stuff in there.
Yeah.
But people don't understand that these people were barbarians. Mm-hmm. They would kill their enemy and eat their hearts. They were, I mean, this was a step up for them. You know, it's like, it's very, yeah. It's very hard to bring a society that is based in barbarism and just bring them right out into, you know, like Western culture. The easiest I've seen it is in the 1950s, there was a group of missionaries that were going to Ecuador, and there was this tribe in Ecuador that was a carnivorous tribe. I mean, in the 50s of the 20th century. And they had done everything. They had dropped pictures of themselves, and they went in, you know, they wanted to go in there and tell them about the gospel. And they went in there and they killed them all. And it ended up that over a bunch of years that they were able to go in there, and not over a bunch of years either, over 5 to 10 years, and basically westernize this tribe. And why was it easy to do that? Well, because they had the gospels, they had Jesus's teaching, they're preaching peace. I mean, when you go in there and you're, even if you don't believe God exists, okay? Even if you believe that the Bible is all tales, to not believe that it hasn't brought peace. I mean, the people who wrote the Bible were writing these laws so that, because they cared about the people. They didn't want them. They were the leaders of the people, and they didn't want them to continue being barbarians. They wanted them to be able to coexist. They wanted them to be able to become human. Mm-hmm. And they were the leaders. They cared about these people. You can see it in the writings. That's why people who haven't read the Bible, it's like, you can see that. If you really think about it, it can be pointed out. The leaders today, they want to kill you. They want to send you off into wars. They for money, for mammon. It's insane for people to think that we actually have it better now when it comes to like morality than we did back then. I mean, there was a question I asked, and I think I got it from Curtis Yarvin, and it was a poll that I did on Twitter, and I said, "Would you rather live in 1900 with 2020 technology, or would you rather live in 2020 with 1900 technology?" And immediately the autists started, "Well, you mean we're going to have nuclear weapons in 1900? That's not what we're talking about here, okay? No. What we're talking about here is culture. Would you rather live in the culture of 1900, or would you rather live in the culture of now? And if you are somebody who cares about individual liberty, you would much rather live back then.
Right.
Because now we're in this totalitarian state. After World War I, everything got destroyed. After World War I, they made the West democratic. Mm-hmm. And then we had a century of half a billion or more people killed by their governments. And we think it's better because we have air conditioning? I mean, it's insane that people don't understand culture and and how much Christianity specifically had to do with that. Even Islam in so many places. I mean, fundamentalist, the amount of fundamentalist Islam that you see, the violence and everything, has been such a minute part of Islam over the centuries. You know, it's just something that we're taught so that the military industrial complex can go about and do what they do. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, yeah, and that's one of the things, one of the problems that I have with libertarianism is, and this doesn't come from Rothbard. Rothbard knew more about Christianity than most Christians do who are alive today. And it doesn't come from Mises. And it doesn't come from Hoppe. And all three of them were atheists.
Right.
Maybe it's the Ayn Rand group. Maybe it's the Objectivists that where it comes from, where she was just so anti-religion to the point where it was just absolutely this. I mean, she would trust corporations, mega corporations, before she would trust a Christian. I mean, and it's always bothered me because it's like, especially the ones that are like, well, you know, we need more numbers, but why do you believe in a sky daddy? Mm-hmm. Well, now that's over half the country that you're alienating. So what you only want atheists to become libertarians, and if Christians do become libertarians, are they supposed to renounce their faith? I don't know that anybody's really thinking about the implications of the things that come out of their mouth. And that may just go to the fact that people, I don't know how many people are really that smart anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, or intelligent, or are really thinking things through or playing a long game. You know, that seems important to me.
So I want to address a lot of what you said there, but I've heard you say a few times on different shows I've been watching, you say that there are high profile libertarians who are basically demanding that Christians renounce their faith to become libertarians. I'm just wondering, who is that? Like, is that just people on Twitter, or where are you actually seeing that?
Well, I'm talking about loud. I mean, and it really isn't on Twitter as much as it is on Facebook. Okay. And it's people who have a lot of following, people who have pages, you know, where thousands and thousands of people follow the page and everything like that. Facebook is a real cancer. Yes. But you know, that feed, stuff can get into that feed. And once you click on something, more and more of that stuff comes in and mm-hmm. you start seeing more of it. And yeah, it's really, I think it's pretty disgusting. I mean, it's just, I mean, you're saying stuff on Facebook you wouldn't say to your neighbor and to your neighbor's face. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, come on. Anybody who's met me in real life knows that I'm exactly like I am on Twitter. I mean, I'm just as freaking bombastic on Twitter.
A little bit nicer in person, but
yeah. But I will tell you if I don't agree with something, we will get into it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I am an atheist, and it's not a choice. You know, I feel like a lot of people are not honest with themselves, whether they're atheist or Christian or libertarian or not libertarian. A lot of people would look at atheism as a social fad, or the same with libertarianism. You know, they're like, oh, that sounds edgy, that sounds cool, I'm going to go do that. Or also, you know, this also coincides with both atheism and libertarianism. The idea that I can be a degenerate and I'm not going to have any consequences for living that lifestyle, you know, that's why they choose both of these things. Personally, like I mean, I was brought up very Christian. I was the worship leader in my church for a few years. I was way into apologetics. I did evangelism training. I've read the whole Bible, parts of it many times. I have bawled my eyes out praying to God when I was a kid. You know, I mean, so like I've lived that life, like I get it. And so many of these atheists haven't, you know, they were brought up without religion and it's just, oh, that's stupid from day one. They've never actually felt the feeling of like wanting God to talk to you or anything. You know, it's all just completely alien to them. But for me and for a lot of other people, it's just, I mean, just like with libertarianism, I became disenchanted with being a neocon just because the ideology just started falling away and it wasn't something I wanted. I didn't want to be a libertarian. I wasn't like, oh, that would be cool, or I won't have to believe in militarism anymore. It wasn't any of that. It was just like, this isn't really adding up for me anymore. And slowly over the course of a couple of years, became a libertarian. It was a pretty similar journey with atheism. Like I just stopped believing in it. And I actually wanted to keep believing in God, especially, but also, you know, libertarianism was pretty uncomfortable, and anarchy, like those ideas are not comforting when you think about them at first. They're kind of scary and open-ended. So they weren't beliefs that I wanted to leave behind, but just, you know, through honest discovery, that's where I ended up. So my question is, for people who don't believe in God, it seems like we should be giving those people some sort of direction to go as well. And that's what I try to do. I try to argue for libertarianism from a, you know, a non-believer's perspective. And a lot of the time I get a lot of pushback that what I'm doing is illegitimate, that I'm, you know, making false equivalencies or whatever. But I don't want everyone who doesn't believe in God to become a degenerate communist. I want to give them a path to go the same way we do. So I guess just what are your thoughts on that? What do you think?
No, I mean, I understand. What I would say is you don't have to become an evangelical. You don't have to be someone who's preaching Christianity. Just understand that that that's something that is important to people. And when you, you know, and look, let's talk about a friend of ours that we respect the hell out of, Ryan Dawson.
Yep.
Probably one of the bravest human beings on the planet.
Yep.
When he starts making fun of Zionism because Sky Daddy, all of his, like the people, he's defending Southern culture. Mm-hmm. When he talks about the Civil War, when he says that, he's alienating the people he defends. Mm-hmm. It's like, and that really upsets me with Ryan. And I will talk to him about, you know, he and I have been Skyping back and forth like crazy lately. And I'm willing to talk to him about that, have him on the show and everything. But that, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I want to use that because I know that Ryan, and I use Ryan's name because I know Ryan's skin is thick enough that I can talk about it. And, you know, I'll hit him up after this and let him know we talked about it. Mm-hmm. But that just, to me, it's insane. It's like, you can do better. I mean, it's so easy to destroy Zionism. You don't have to go there. You know, you don't have to talk about the book like that. You know, why are you, libertarians should just get out of their own way. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with libertarians is when you think that you're the smartest people in the room, and you may be, sometimes you overthink things. I mean, I do it. I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. But it's just not doing, it's not helping. It just doesn't help. It's not, you're alienating people. Like right now, the left in this country, for the most part, is insane. Mm-hmm. They want you dead. You know, it's like Michael Malice says, they want you dead, but they'll settle for your submission. But I don't know too many people on the right. I mean, there are some people on the right who probably want me dead. I don't know a lot of them. You know, I was talking with Jose Nino yesterday, who really follows the right. And you know, he was saying, and I told him my theory is that right now the right is like a standing army with no general. They have like nobody to tell them what to do and everything. And they'd be so easy to ally with. But when the Libertarian Party is celebrating abortion and they're celebrating open borders and they celebrate, and libertarians are so vocal about atheism, I mean, you're just going to be stuck out on an island by yourselves doing nothing. Mm-hmm. What do you do? I mean, Michael Heiss does some great things on the local level with the Mises Caucus. And, you know, I know that he's had more victories probably than the friggin' Libertarian Party's had in their whole existence. Mm-hmm. But you don't hear Michael Heiss talking about all these things. You don't hear him bringing it up. You don't hear Dave bringing it up. You know, so it's like, why? What's the point? You know, why do you want to stay out on the island? Because you get to be right. You get to be like, I told you so every once in a while. Mm-hmm. It's pretty lonely. And then it might get to the point where they come after you. And then what? Who's backing you up? The people that you told them that they believe in a Sky Daddy. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the whole thing about, you know, everybody's like talking about, oh, these post-libertarians and these praxians and everything like that. And, you know, who do they think they are? I think we're people who realize that libertarianism has no power and never has had any power whatsoever. If I can tell you that Michael Heiss in the last 3 years has done more, has accomplished more than the whole Libertarian Party has in 50, that should let you know something. And because we come together and we start asking questions, and, you know, and what's funny is I've heard people refer to us as black-pilled. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first things I heard. Oh, you sound black-pilled. Well, first of all, we're like talking about HOPA's what must be done strategy, which is a local strategy to take over towns and create 10,000 Liechtensteins. That doesn't sound black-pilling to me. Mm-hmm. Unless you are of the opinion that the only way that liberty can be achieved is if it's your way, mm-hmm. if it's the LP way, if it's the Mises Caucus way. Some, you know, there might be some people who don't agree with that. There might be some of us like myself who think that the Mises, that the idea that the Mises caucus that Michael has of doing local politics is friggin' fantastic, but would like to see like hammered out exactly, you know, to, as you're recruiting people into it, to lay it out, have a game plan, have people, you know exactly what's going on. And, you know, we're looking at things like, you know, how basically the failure of liberty. I mean, how it, if you're still posting memes about how taxation is theft after the last 18 months, fuck you. Seriously, fuck you. If you're still talking about friggin', you know, civil asset forfeiture, stuff like that, fuck you. Totalitarianism is here. Well, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Post memes? Okay. Well, I mean, that's helpful.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying there. So it might just be because I come from the other side that I see it the other way. But for instance, and I've talked to Dave about this, so I don't mind bringing it up here. But do you remember, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago, he went on Kennedy and that liberal guy freaked out at him about what Dave said about Biden's position on the war on drugs. Did you see that clip?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah,
it was amazing. Toward the end, she asked Dave something about schools, you know, people being, it was about critical race theory in public schools. And so Dave said, you know, it took me a long time to realize this, but this is the big lie of atheism, that you can't have a God. And I didn't get offended by that. You know, I don't care. Like the first time I had you on my show, you didn't know my religious beliefs at all, but you said like atheism is a cancer in the liberty movement. And I don't care. Like it doesn't, and it wasn't what I wanted to talk about. So we just kept going. I'm not an autistic, you know, atheist who screeches every time someone says something like that. But if I went on Kennedy and I said something to the opposite nature of that, like, oh, Christians just love to be subjugated to some overlord that tells them what to do, I don't think I'd ever hear the end of it. Like, I think I would have people just coming at me for weeks and months, and probably some people wanting me kicked out or like silenced or not saying it anymore. So I agree with you on, and most of the people I think you're talking about that I've seen at least are kind of low on the totem pole. It just seems, if I were to make a similar statement of that caliber to that size audience, it would have much bigger blowback than what he said. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I think it depends how you're framing your argument. I mean, if you're framing your argument that, you know, the Bible teaches that Christ is king, so why are you bowing to any other kings? Mm-hmm. That's an argument that the Christian anarchists use.
Well, see,
you know,
what I would say is, like, if I, you know, if I had been in Dave's position, what I would have said is, it's so ironic that these atheists who claim to have no God, no master or whatever, and they claim to, you know, that religion is stupid or worshiping illegitimate authority is dumb, that they do that exact same thing with the state. And the state doesn't deserve any, you know, it doesn't deserve any deity status at all, because we can see how fallible it is and how horrible it is at doing everything. So I agree with you that like there's a good way to go about framing it, but I feel like in general, the framing toward atheists can be negative on a, like a wide platform, and it just kind of gets swept under the rug. If the same thing were done to Christians, I think it would just blow up. I mean, there were people making jokes a few months ago, and that threw all of Twitter into a tizzy for like a week. Much less if someone said something like that on a large audience. I just don't think that the blowback would be comparable, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that if you did say exactly what you mentioned on Kennedy, I think the Libertarian Party would cheer you.
About Christians being subjugated to their master or whatever.
Yeah. I think the mainstream of the Libertarian Party would cheer you. I think the Catoites would cheer you. I think the Reasonites would cheer you.
Maybe. I don't know. I just know the at least the people in my circles would not. I mean, I'm not in the Reason Cato circles. I'm more in the Mises caucus, like more right-wing libertarian circles. But so I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just not exposed to the cringe Lulberts at the same level everyone else is. But I feel like, I don't know, you know, when Cato came out endorsing vaccine passports, I feel like that was pretty resoundingly rejected. I mean, pretty universally rejected among libertarians. Like everybody was trashing that. I don't think that these people have as much perceived power in the liberty movement as we like to give them. And you look at their followings, they have like, you know, the guy who was speaking in favor of vaccine passports, I think he has like 500 followers or something.
And I think you are very correct that in the liberty movement, he would not have been he wasn't championed. Mm-hmm. What about at large? I mean, you're saying the echo chamber didn't receive it well. How did the outside receive it? Mm-hmm. What was the impressions of people? I mean, if growing the movement and having a second Ron Paul revolution is so important for our future freedom and future liberty, how do people outside receive that? Mm-hmm. And that's the way I look at it too. I mean, you know, there's a reason why nobody, you know, there's a reason why Jeff Deist and no one from the Mises Institute is invited on MSNBC or CNN and barely on Fox News. I mean, I think I saw Jeff on Kennedy once. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason. And, you know, I mean, they don't spreading that. When I went on Tim Pool, okay, I basically talked about, which is something that comes from neo-reactionary thought, that the left is chaos and the right is order, even if neither side realizes it. And I started talking about order, and I was talking about how we don't want violence. We want order. When we see our cities burning down, there's a reaction to it. You know, that it's like, wait a minute, why is this happening? Well, the left is in charge. The left is in charge of the nation. The left is in charge of those big cities. And I looked in the comments because I had my phone and I'm following the chat. And people, and a couple of people said, wait a minute, libertarians aren't for order. What does that tell you? Mm-hmm. The outside perception of libertarianism to, you know, people outside of our echo chamber. I mean, people inside our echo chamber aren't for order. And then when I start talking about order, people are like, oh, but you know, chaos theory, or Mises talks about how the free market is chaos. That's not the kind of order and chaos I'm talking about. I'm talking about how the overwhelming majority of humanity abhors violence. They hate violence. They just want to be safe. Who are you? Do you feel safer living in a right-wing town? Or do you feel safer living in Chicago?
Yeah.
I mean, this is stuff libertarians, I mean, there are libertarians right now live watching this who are like, well, you're just a paleo libertarian. You know, you've read too much Hoppe and, you know, you're like way too much reading 90s Rothbard and stuff like that. I think I'm speaking logic. I think most people want order. I think most people would rather live in Fort Worth, Texas, than they would the south side of Chicago. It, given a choice. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm insane. Maybe I've read too much. I don't know. Maybe it's gotten to that point.
That's the problem. Yeah, I mean, I feel like people are conflating libertarianism with morality, because I've been hearing this argument a lot. Like, to me, the non-aggression principle is not the fullness of morality. It's not the fullness of living to your potential. It's kind of just the baseline for how to coexist in a society. So I think you could have a non-aggressive society that's still incredibly unimpressive to live in. I mean, maybe you could have an aggressive society that's more impressive to live in, just because the aggressors are doing things, you know. Like, I don't feel like non-aggression is success. I mean, that's just kind of where you start out. Like, if you're not killing your neighbor and stealing his stuff, I don't think you should feel like you're on some sort of moral pedestal there.
That's one of the problems that I have with the non-aggression principle as laid out by the LP, is they put in the phrase political means. Mm-hmm. To me, the non-aggression principle is me and my neighbor. Power is about force. And sometimes it's about violence. I mean, a lot of people believe that libertarianism is derived. A lot of people trace libertarianism to like the founding of the country. Mm-hmm. And then they won't address the fact that most of those people who were fighting, I mean, first of all, 2% tax, and then they wanted to raise it 0.5%. Is you shoot people over that? Or that when you start reading like the pamphlets that were put out to try to get people to revolt, there were conspiracy theories in there about how the Church of England was sending over priests to try and get turn Presbyterians into Church of England. I mean, there was like it was conspiracy theories. It was like 0.5% tax. No, it's a bunch of people it's a bunch of elites who were bootleggers and, you know, ran illegal, quote unquote, illegal stuff, or were being taxed at home, who decided, let's just be free. And everybody points back to that as if it was like this major turning point. Maybe it was this major turning point in thought, but also it gave us what we have today. I mean, it took 250 years, and I know a lot of people don't care about that. They don't care about legacy. They don't care about, you know, what, because most people aren't, once they're two generations removed, once one generation is removed from them, they probably won't even be remembered anymore by their own family. But some people care about legacy. Obviously, you see that. And if we were to get it back to where it was at the founding, I mean, we know that 250 years from now, or even quicker because of technology, it would just go back to where it is today. Mm-hmm. So maybe we got to find a better way. Maybe it went wrong somewhere in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe something that we look at as like this positive movement forward, maybe it was actually a mistake. People don't ask questions like that. You know, I mean, it's the whole thing about culture, and is culture better now or is culture worse? And as opposed to 121 years ago, I think most leftists will tell you it's better. I think most people on the right will be like, oh, I wish we could really go back. And which one is correct? I don't know. Which one had less violence? I don't know. I tend to look at violence is very important to me. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to mitigate violence. And I think the one good thing that libertarianism has going for it is that I think private property and knowing what you own and knowing what you own and knowing what I own and knowing that they don't cross over is a beautiful start to mitigating violence.
Mm-hmm. I agree with a lot of what you've said about culture. I think a lot of people they incorrectly think that I am some sort of libertine, left-leaning person, where that's very, I don't think you think that, but a lot of people on Twitter do, where I'm actually basically a traditional right-winger. If you looked at my lifestyle, I barely ever drink. I don't do any drugs because I'm a truck driver. I work 60 hours a week. You know, I basically live the American dream that, you know, they taught in the 50s or whatever, although I work more hours than, you know, what they promised. But even though I'm an atheist and a libertarian, I think that structure and drive and a lot of what you guys are talking about with building your own wealth and advancing yourself, regardless of what the system does, is important. I mean, if you're waiting for the Federal Reserve to go away before you start saving money or investing in anything, okay, good luck. But, you know, I think that does a lot more to erode the state than just voting a certain way or, you know, having an ideology that is stateless. Like, if you actually build up your own wealth and if you actually have strong families, and you actually have people who can stand on their own two feet, that's going to give a lot less power to the state, because the state wants to step in where people are missing those things and fill the void. And I think you're right that libertarianism, or libertarians, I should say, probably lift up those values that lead you toward degeneracy and also lead you toward a more likely place where you're going to need the state for help.
Yeah. That's one thing people don't want to hear. You know, it was like that tweet that I had last week. I think it was Saturday or Sunday when that video came out of people just pouring across the Rio Grande. Mm-hmm. It was just like hundreds and hundreds of people pouring across the Rio Grande. And I retweeted it and I said, these people are coming here to help us establish Ancapistan. And I knew when I tweeted that out that it was going to be confusing to some people. And I knew that the smart people would get it, that I was saying, how do we know who these people are in the first place? If COVID's so important, why is, you know, and so many people on the left or even left-leaning libertarians who are, you know, wearing their masks and their profile pic and promoting the fact that they've had the vaccination and everything. Well, you're not worried that, are they checking their vaccine cards as they're crossing the Rio Grande?
They're handing out vaccine passports on the bank of the river.
Yeah. And not to mention the fact that, you know, I'm one of these people who believes that really in this lifetime, the only way that we're going to have there's a chance of living in a private property society will be at the most local level. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that it's not going to happen on a grand scale. And I think people are like, oh, you know, we're going to abolish the state, and then all of a sudden Ancapistan is going to be here. Mm-hmm. I mean, 99% of what percentage of people don't want that? What percentage of people will fight to bring the government back?
Yeah.
So it has to be done on the local level. And if you think that by bringing people in that you have no idea what they believe and you have no idea whether they're going to go and get on a, you know, get entitlements, which grows the state, you have no idea whether they're going to commit crimes and go into prison, and which grows the state, then, I mean, why would you be for this? Why would you? I mean, it just seems to me like, you know, my idea of immigration is sponsored. You know, you basically, a company says, yeah, I'm inviting that person in. Anything that happens, you know, we take care of it. We're liable for. Just allowing people to come and go, which seems to be what so many libertarians, you know, advocate for, is that going to usher in Ancapistan? And really, how, when you don't know who these people are, what they believe? And then you have, you know, I know that Cato's come out with some great studies where they've cherry-picked so many different, illegal immigration increases the, you know, helps the economy. How's the economy doing? Okay. Well, I mean, we finally have consumer price inflation. They're printing trillions. Basically, all entitlement programs are at the point where everything's ready to crash. It's like, and then you're like, well, this is the libertarian position, you know, and I hope to see Ancapistan in my lifetime. Good luck. Good luck. I mean, the funny thing about this whole thing, oh, just let people come and go. That's not how it would be done in Ancapistan. Mm-hmm. So why do you think that what you're advocating for now is going to lead you there? What? And then all of a sudden everything's going to change? Everything becomes a private property society? Actually, in Ancapistan, the way it would be is you would have companies who would sponsor people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the open borders argument is strawmanned on both sides, because, and I should probably stop using the term open borders, because I've kind of realized that you're correct in when you say open borders means government control of the border, allowing anyone in and out, which is basically like a Democrat position, or some Democrats believe in that. Where I think most libertarians who are arguing, or maybe not most, I don't know, the ones that I agree with who are arguing for open borders, they want private borders. They don't want this, all this wasted money going toward.
But that's not open borders. Open means free flow.
Right.
It means come and go. Private means literal. Private means restriction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be like restricting people. You know, I mean, I'm for privately owned borders as well. But right. Guess what? We're not even close to that.
Yep.
And that's what that when people start arguing for that, and they're like, "Well, my position is privately owned borders." I'm like, "Well, what do we do now?" My position is privately owned borders. That's when I came up with the phrase "Stop living in Ancapistan right. in your head," because you have to. What you're not, because you call yourself an anarchist who pays taxes, by the way, all of a sudden you can't have an opinion on the real world. You have to live in a fantasy land. I don't know, man.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, I mean, because I would agree with Ron Paul in the immediate sense, stop, you know, don't give amnesty to people who come over here. You have to cut off the welfare state at some point. It seems like people go in the opposite direction. You know, we need to build a 50-foot wall the entire length, and that's going to solve the problem. And it's become this really dumb dichotomy of open borders or Trump. You know, like those are the only options. And it's like, well, there's a lot in between that. And there's a lot, if you're an anarchist who wants private borders, there's a lot of things we can do to move in that direction. I don't think funding a state, state funding a giant 50-foot wall across the southern border is the solution. And that's, I think that's where people's minds go. And I don't think that's where your mind goes, or, you know, those of us who actually know what we're talking about. But to the bystander, they think, you know, it's all binary thinking. It's just giant wall or let everyone in, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately. You know, I mean, it could be done so easily now. We could come up with, we have brilliant ideas for how immigration could be done, but it's become such a political issue that, you know, it's like the Democrats want what they saw last week. And then you have a Democrat president, and, you know, there's horses out there that are, you know, and I mean, it's like, oh, they're using whips. Oh, they're, it's like, no, they're not. I mean, I saw the reverse of that picture, and the guy was just reaching down, and he was grabbing the guy by the shirt and everything like that. There was no whip. He wasn't even using the reins. Come on. Whatever you think of that. Even if you think that the fact that there's people out there on horses invokes some kind of, you know, return to slavery and slave catchers and everything. The fact is that what was being reported wasn't true. And I mean, it's so easy. I mean, you don't even have to. I mean, could it's if you change the culture, people will demand that somebody that they're hiring is, you know, came here in the right way.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, think about it. I mean, I would think that if I own the company right now and I had multiple employees, I would want to know everything about that employee. You know, I mean, but we've raised up this culture where these businesses are like so used to hiring illegals and, you know, not caring about them and dropping them, you know, if they get hurt on the job, just dropping them off on the foot of the emergency. I mean, that's just a culture that you've created. I'm not saying the businesses are evil, and that is kind of fucking evil, but that's the culture now. And when the culture is that, people have a tendency to be like, oh, I don't care what happens to these people. I mean, they're just basically, we're using them as cogs, man. It's just, I mean, it's so much easier. But really, what do you do in the meantime? What do you do in the meantime? I mean, you just, like the thing where they said, what was it, 12,000, 13,000 Haitians were at Haiti's 2,000 miles away from there. Now, and I know that they weren't all brought over overnight, that there were some, you know, it had to have been done over time and everything. But how did they get there? Who paid for them to get there? Haiti's one of the poorest nations on the planet. How did they get there? Mm-hmm. They didn't swim. They didn't friggin' do a raft like Cubans coming to Key West. So how did they get there? obviously somebody somewhere is friggin' financing this. And what are the goals of it? And if you hate, if you're a libertarian who hates politics, realize that this is all political. Why would you want to have an opinion on it? Why would you want to champion it? You know, why would you want to be like, you know, Alex Narasta from Cato, who is just, if anything that we've said, that you and I have said, is xenophobic, it's because we're xenophobic and we don't want to live next to people who don't look like us. That's not even an argument. You know how they're offering, they want Dave to debate this guy and they're like, off, you know, 700 meals to the homeless or something. Don't debate this guy. What's he going to do? Get up on stage and just say racism for an hour and a half? These people are insane. And plus, he's part of a friggin' Washington, D.C. Think tank. And he, half of the stuff he says sounds like progressive. He put out a tweet saying that, you know, I can't get into HAPA because HAPA never wrote on economics. These people are propagandists. They're not libertarians. They're progressives. And I think Dave has said this before in an episode where he did with Malice. These are people who are looking to use libertarian means, quote unquote, libertarian means, to get to progressive ends. They're the enemy. They're the enemy of liberty. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I have to say it.
Yeah, so something you said on Liam McCollum's show that really resonated with me is that people are not ready to give up government. And I've thought the same thing about religion. I've been an atheist for like 6 years now, but I went through like the angry atheist stage for like 3 or 4 months. And then I grew up and I realized like my cousin had just gone through a really, really nasty divorce. His wife was weaponizing his kids against him. And I mean, it was just terrible. And you would never guess it because he just seemed happy all the time. And he would always attribute that to, you know, God's getting me through it. And so I had no desire to try to convince him that God wasn't real. I was like, if that's what is getting you through, like, that's great. That's cool. And, you know, you see atheists on Twitter, like if someone's kid is dying and they post like, please pray for my kid. You see these douchebags go and say, oh, God's not real. What's wrong with you? You know, like, fuck those people. But
prayers are free. Come on.
Yeah. But I the same way that I've thought that about religion, like, you know, in order for religion to go away, we'd have to have an extreme revolution of the mind and people would have to start thinking very differently. I do think that that's also true about the state. So I'm almost like a personal anarchist and personal atheist. You know, like I don't think I need religion or the government to keep me in line. But I do realize that there are a lot of people out there who have been trained to be that way, either way. And I think what you're talking about and what a lot of the Praxians are talking about, the supply and demand. If there's a demand for something, you're always going to have it. So if you hate that thing, you need to supply some other alternative to get rid of it. Let's just close with that. Why don't you just explain that whole idea that everything is economics, the idea that if we want to supplant the state, we need another option. It's almost what Larry Sharp says, actually. I've had him on the show. He's talked about that same idea.
Yeah. I mean, I'll do my best to channel Andrew from Popular Liberty.
Hopefully have it on the show soon, by the way. So
it's amazing. It's amazing. And you have to start with archotropism, his laws of archotropism, because once you get even a small understanding of them, you'll really start to understand this. If people desire the state, somebody is going to be there to supply it. If people desire violence, but they don't want to do it themselves, they're going to find someone to supply it. And they're going to do everything they can to legitimize it. And as demand grows, business grows. It gets bigger and bigger. And we're at the point in history where the overwhelming majority of people desire the state. So when you realize that, the idea of having the United States become Ancapistan, you know, on a grand scale, 330 million people, you realize that that's false. And you have to start looking at different things. And, you know, it's one of the things that it's the main thing I agree with the Mises Caucus with, is that all politics is local and you have to work locally.
Mm-hmm.
Basically my whole thing with the Mises Caucus, if I have any disagreement with them now, is just on strategy. The message is, I like that message, but the strategy, you know, we can argue about that, but you know, I understand the Libertarian Party is not going anywhere. I understand the Mises Caucus isn't going anywhere. I would just like to influence them as much as possible about strategy, because that's what a bunch of us have been talking about. And you know, most of it's come out of, you know, I'll mention his name again, is Hoppe, is his 1997, I think it was January 24th, 25th, Mises Conference in California. And it's what must be done. And he talks about, if we're going to do this, we have to do it at the local level. He doesn't talk about anarchism in the whole thing. He talks about 10,000 Liechtensteins, how you have to start doing city-states. And imagine in 25 years ago when he gave that speech, if people would have taken it seriously and started doing it. I mean, the country would look a lot different today. I mean, outside of the big cities. I mean, this isn't going to work in the big cities. So if you realize that the overwhelming majority of people desire something, they're going to get it, then you have to start as local as possible. And it's like Andrew says, it's going to work in red areas. You have to start, the experimentation grounds have to be in red areas. Republicans already think they believe in low taxes. They think they believe in all this liberty and everything. Well, sell it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out a message to sell it to them, to get to know them. But what I say is, you're also going to have to be impressive people who are selling this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the libertarians or even the conservatarians who want to do this should probably be financially well off.
Mm-hmm.
So that getting this isn't a way of generating income from them. You know, it's all ideological for them. It's about, you know, what Hoppe talks about in What Must Be Done is private, you know, basically getting a town to privatize. One of the first things you do is you start talking about how the only people that should be able to vote are people who own property. And if those people own property, but they have government jobs, they're not net taxpayers. So they should be exempt from that. And if you're going to start making arguments like that, you're going to have to go in slow. And Andrew has done this where he's not jumped right to that, where you start going in, you start talking about sovereign wealth funds, like in the Nordic model, what they do with their retirement funds over there, and doing that, creating that to get in the door. Because when you start explaining to them, people on the right, exactly what that is, they should be into buying it, because it clicks all the boxes on conservatism. And then you just go from there. And your goal is to, as Hoppe says, is to privatize as much as possible. And you talk about privatizing the schools. Talk about your goal is to privatize everything. And that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for friggin' social justice. We're looking for private property. When people have private property rights, when people can, Andrew says, when you can control your own statecraft on your property, you tend to not really care about outside influences. We talked about, it's like, okay, so say you start doing this and it starts working and you have people who are Democrats in the town. What do? They start getting local. I don't know, pay them to leave. I mean, pay them to leave. If that doesn't work, force them. I mean, use, force them out. I mean, just make it so that you're implementing so much that they don't want to stay there anymore, and that no other, Democrats want to move into the area. Leftism is friggin' cancer. I mean, right on the right in this country, the pro-war kind of sentiment and things like that, it's terrible. It really is. I mean, it's the worst thing that governments do. But if you start selling people on localism, and you start getting people into localism, well, I mean, my town can't start a war with anyone. Can't afford it. You know, so it's like, I mean, if they start thinking about being, you know, citizens of their town before they more than citizens of the country, that stuff starts to fade away after a while. You know, I mean, it just makes sense, but it's really the only way it's going to be done. It's only going to be done on the local level at this point. I mean, you just can't. People have been sold a bill of goods, or either people have been sold a bill of goods through 15,000 hours of government indoctrination centers, or it's just in people's DNA at this point that they want a government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe strategy at this point is more important than numbers. And that's another thing that the quote unquote Praxians, you know, we Praxians say is maybe we don't need another Ron Paul revolution. Maybe we just need better strategy at the local level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I certainly agree with some of that. I think that I lambast the Republicans all the time on Twitter. But if you look at what I'm lambasting, it's national stuff, foreign policy. You know, if you have a Republican governor or a Republican councilman or a Republican representative in your state who has your back and is about localism, I don't think I've ever trashed the idea of going that route. But I think a lot of people have taken what I've said about the National Republican Party and, you know, how they've sold us short and how I think they've actually set up a lot of the systems that the left uses against us now. I think a lot of people think that I'm also talking about what Tho Bishop is trying to do or you guys are trying to do. And it really isn't that. I mean, I don't go after if you have a Republican mayor that you want to elect or something like that. I think that's a completely different level. I think you'd probably agree with that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I said it on Tim Pool. I told that guy, Sean Parnell, I said, I'd rather see Mayor Parnell of his hometown.
Right.
You know, or if he had to, Governor Parnell of Pennsylvania. And it's just because I don't believe that Washington can be changed.
Right.
And what you said about, you know, you were talking about how the Republicans, you know, basically insiders and, you know, what I called them on that show. And I thank Tho Bishop for this because he was the one. You know, I knew I was going to go up against a right winger on that. So I was talking to Tho because he's one of the best when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. That the national GOP is controlled opposition for the regime.
Yep.
They're controlled opposition for the regime is the left. So they're controlled opposition for the left. So, I mean, local it is, state it is. Or if you have a state that is, you know, Florida is going to be interesting because I 100%. I mean, I don't 100% agree with everything DeSantis is doing, but as far as like the COVID tyranny, you know, I'm pretty down with what he's doing to the point where, you know, I've told people in the Florida LP that they should not run a governor against the LP should not run a governor against him because it would just they're not going to get elected. They could steal enough votes that a leftist could get in there and. The leftists that they ran in the against DeSantis in the last election turned out to be a crackhead. I mean, a literal crackhead who would have shut down the whole fucking state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, I mean, and I know that that's definitely not living in Ancapistan in your head because I'm advocating that the LP. And that libertarians that do vote, I mean, I would vote for DeSantis if I was in Florida. I don't know that I can wake up early enough to go vote anymore. But if I was inclined to vote, I mean, I was in Florida, I would vote for DeSantis. You know, yeah, I mean,
my worry with DeSantis is I do think he might run for president, and I think he would win. And I agree. I mean, as Florida governor, fine, like whatever. But as president, I think he'd be worse than Biden just because of, you know, his extreme Zionist. I don't think he's scared of any authoritarian measures when it comes to national security. So that's I mean, I've gone pretty hard against him it's really been about that type of stuff because I just see him being set up to be that type of candidate. I could be wrong, but I don't know.
No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I would rather see him as president of Florida than president of the United States. Yeah. I mean, seriously, or king of Florida, as I've said before, just to piss people off. You know, I mean, he stumbled on it at first. He did shut down some stuff because I remember Tom lives in Florida, and he when Georgia reopened before Florida did.
Right.
And Tom came up to Georgia and he started hitting some restaurants and everything. And then he got his and then DeSantis, you know, I don't know what happened. Maybe he just got together with some strategists and said, this is what we're going to play, how we're going to play it from now on. Or the tourism board.
Yeah.
Got with him because, I mean, if people don't realize, Florida is really big on tourism. Kind of. Yeah, I lived there for 20 years. I kind of know what Florida is all about. And yeah, I mean, he fell in line. But yeah, he'd be a terrible president. Yeah. I don't know what Tho said about, you know, voting for DeSantis as president. I think that he and Dave talked about that once and everything. But it's like, I just don't even care about national politics anymore, to the point where it's like, I'm more worried about Governor DeWine here and trying to find a populist to run against him, you know. Yeah. to primary him, you know, to find a Trump guy to primary him, to get him out of there. Cause I mean, he's deep in training. He was a friggin' senator in the early 2000s. I mean, he's total friggin' he's total regime. So it'd be nice to get him the hell out of here and get somebody like even as insane as Matt Gaetz to come in or something like that.
Well, hey, man, I really appreciate you coming on and talking this over. I always like talking to you. I'll have to do it again in the future.
Hey, we got to meet at Porkfest. That was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
We got to meet your dad, man.
Yeah, I'm one of the few guys that knows Pete in person and that he's actually nice. You know, the Twitter stuff. If you only see his outbreaks on Twitter, you don't really know the guy. He's
I have those in real life. Stacy can attest to those outbursts in real life when she's just like, okay, I'm on your side. Settle down.
Yeah, hopefully I never end up seeing those. Hopefully it's just the Porkfest meetings. But I've got your YouTube, your Twitter, and your Substack linked in the description. Is there anything else you want to plug or anything else you want to say? Or
Stateless Productions. If you have Amazon Prime, there's a little documentary on there called The Monopoly on Violence that me and a couple friends of mine made about the history of the state, solutions, and a really good history of anarcho-capitalism. And I always thank the Mises Institute for being so generous and allowing us to shoot so much of that at the Mises Institute and do the interviews at the Mises Institute. We're really proud of that documentary and can't wait. We're shooting number two right now and actually writing number three. So
there you go.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for watching, everyone. I'll catch you on the next stream.